Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he watches 10,000 movies before he turns 40. Thank you so much for downloading this episode, listening, sharing with a friend. This is another one of our preview review episodes as we get ready to see Rogue One. Now, spoiler alert, I will be seeing this movie for the second time when I go see it with Brian. I already saw it, caught it a day or so before we are recording this, and I'm excited to see the movie again. So that may tell you a little bit about what I think of it so far, but this will be Brian's first time. If you've already seen the movie, and want to join in this conversation, please do so by joining us on Twitter at 10kmovies, T-E-N-K Movies, or going to Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, and letting your comments and questions and opinions be known. So, Brian, let's jump right into it. First with this question, what number movie is Rogue One going to be for you?
7,393.
And what are you expecting for Rogue One? I know this time last year we went and saw Episode 7, and your excitement level was sky high for that.
That's true.
How does it compare to Rogue One?
It is not the same. I mean, I think we all kind of know that this is like these anthology movies, at least right now, are appetizers for the main course, which is the trilogy. Although I will say that while this is a fine effort, I don't think anybody was clamoring to see or know how the Death Star plans were stolen. Although, you know, certainly I like the idea that that little one line in the opening crawl of Episode 4 can inspire its own film. I like that. But I think as far as the anthology films, the two that everyone is sort of salivating for are the young Han Solo and the Boba Fett movie. I think we're all very excited. I think, you know, this story, nobody was really dying to see this story or knows these characters. It's brand, you know, it's not like we have an emotional connection to the characters we're going to see on screen. Although, from what I understand, the opportunity to see Darth Vader again is one that everybody's getting kind of, it gives you a little bit of goosebumps to think about.
Yeah, I will say the buildup for this movie has been quite different. It was always going to be, because it's not as much time in between the last time we saw a Star Wars film on screen. You know, Episode 7 and Episode 3 had many more years in between it than obviously, you know, this one, Rogue One and Episode 7. So, but I must say, I think the buildup was pretty masterfully plotted in terms of the way the trailers were released and the little reveals and things that came to him.
Yeah, I think
it did kick up a notch when you saw that. Oh yeah, Darth Vader's gonna be in this somewhere.
That does change everything. And the fact that, you know, they were able to get James Earl Jones to come back and voice the character, presumably for the last time, that's a little another added layer of, like, you know, wow, kind of cool factor.
Yeah. So the question for me is, in kind of thinking about this movie, reflecting on this movie, and particularly where you might rank this movie among the 7,000, almost 400 that you've seen, what is going to make this movie, in your mind, successful? What's going to make it a satisfying experience?
Okay, I'm going to be some nostalgia. I mean, because I can't imagine a film set right before Episode 4 doesn't, you know, if it doesn't really hone in on that nostalgia factor at all, if they miss that mark, then somebody's not doing their job. And there need to be at least one or two characters specific to this film that I care about. If the only characters I care about are characters that I knew from other films that happen to pop into this one, they haven't done a good job of creating an anthology film.
Well, and that to me was one of the big questions going in when I first saw the movie, which is, how are they going to be able to create some emotional resonance for people who have seen all the Star Wars films ahead of time and know kind of, you know, the big premise Are they going to get the plans? Well, if you've seen episode 4, you know the answer to that question. So I think, the success of the movie is going to depend a lot on how they create emotional resonance in other ways. And I'll be real interested to see what you think of that. And I do think
I have heard that this movie was emphasis on the war part of Star Wars. And that I like the idea that this movie really does remind you that this is a battle. This is that they are a war, and that war has consequences. It's kind of like during the Harry Potter series, when they got to the last book, she said there are consequences to these actions. You know, you can't to not do that is to cheat the story of its resonance. And so I like that idea. So, you know, expanding that this war was not just taking place between Darth Vader over here and Luke Skywalker over here. There were other people, millions of other people involved is a good idea.
And that plays into, I think, another maybe criteria that we can talk about after the movie is in making it successful. Is this, was it a necessary movie? Is it different enough? Does it tell a compelling enough story to really make this a necessary film? And I think maybe connected to that too, how well does this film establish that this universe, this world, is bigger than the saga we've seen in episodes 1?
Well, the few, I haven't seen any straight reviews, but a few hints I've seen is that they do a good job of going to different planets and showing you some different environments that maybe, certainly the original trilogy, was really limited in how many locations they really went to.
I will simply nod my head yes and say, yeah, that's true.
without giving anything away. So that in itself, you know, they're setting you up to say, hey, there's a big, we're talking about, you know, a big universe out here. So I like that.
Answer this question too. Last one before we go and grab our snacks. You've seen the trailers, you've seen it. What are one or two things that do actually particularly about this movie you've seen so far and those previews excite you about what's coming next?
Darth coming back is certainly going to be really exciting. I like Forrest Whitaker. I like the idea of Forrest Whitaker in a Star Wars movie. I think that's really cool. I hope his character is more than just a glorified little spot. Everything I've read, the Alan Tudyk robot is fantastic. And since I'm a fan of his anyhow, I like the idea that he's going to get the character that maybe pops back up, recurring throughout this universe. That's a good thing. The main actors themselves, I don't know that much about their character. I mean, I like Ben Mendelsohn, he could be good. I like Mads Mikkelsen, but I don't know enough about their performances to even know if I should be invested in their characters. I don't know, their characters may not survive this film, you know, so I don't know that yet.
Do you know anything about the director?
Gareth Edwards directed Monsters, which was a movie about, it was more a movie about people's reaction to monsters than it was. The monsters were always in the background, like in South Africa, it's a quarantine area. And then he directed the remake of Godzilla from like 2 or 3 years ago, the one with Bryan Cranston in it. And I've seen both those and they were good. I don't know that he's distinguished himself as being, you know, an A-list director, which, you know, I think that's intentional on their part. They're going for guys that are high B-list rather than going after huge, huge names.
And have some experience, it sounds like, too, in the science fiction genre.
Science fiction, yes.
Maybe up-and-coming sort of folks. Well, so I think that'll be a good question, too. Did this sort of maybe not quite yet ready for primetime director? And some actors who are solid, but also maybe not, you know, A-list sort of folks. How well did they do in their performance?
Well, I mean, I think
did they carry the legacy?
If I'm not mistaken, this is apparently the trend now for these blockbuster franchises is to get a director on the cheap. Because I think the guy that directed Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, I think he signed up for Episode 9. So it's like they just said, hey, snag them while they're on the cheap. And, you know, let's let them play because they want to prove themselves, too. And there's no better way to build a resume than have $2 billion movies on it. So
that's true. Well, and some of those $1 billion are going to be ours. Mine, once again, and Brian's for the first time. So we will stop our preview portion there, play a little bit of our music. And then when we come back, we will have the review portion of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. All right, listeners, we are back. This time a little bit later. In the past, when we've done these preview reviews, Brian and I have told you what we thought immediately after the film. This time we took 24 hours to process our feelings after I watched Rogue One a second time and Brian his first time. We're going to tell you how well we think Rogue One answered the questions we had before it, what it did really well, and if we feel like there was anything it could have done better. Before we get deep into our discussions, we should say that this is going to have some spoilers. It's hard to talk about Rogue One without mentioning spoilers. Let's dive in first, then, with just our general impressions, what we thought of the movie as a whole. Let you go. This is your first time seeing it, so what did you think?
As of right now, it's my favorite film I've seen that was released in 2016. I'm anticipating that it'll be no worse than it'll be in the top 5 to 10 by the end of the year, no matter what. I can't see myself having watched 10 movies better than this one.
So higher than God's Not Dead 2?
By about 120 movies.
At least.
This year.
Yeah, that's high praise. And having seen it a second time, I'm even more impressed with it than I was the first time. This is definitely a movie where the rewatchability quotient is high. Knowing what's coming, helps the story have even more of an impact.
This
helps the beats in the story kind of hit a little bit stronger.
Well, this is not necessarily a rare movie, but this is a movie where I would have been perfectly fine if they had actually split this into two movies and spent more time in the first movie developing and letting us grow attached to these characters, and then let the second movie be all about their actual efforts to go into the Scar for whatever it was and get the plans. But, I mean, I'm fine with it as it is. I don't want to complain.
Well, let's get into that. That gets us into a little bit of the questions we had prior to seeing this movie and how we might be able to judge if Rogue One was a success or not. Let's review those really quick. The first question was this movie necessary? Second question was, how well did it go about establishing this Star Wars universe outside of the main saga of episodes 1 through 7? And did it create kind of emotional stakes, considering, you know, what you said, we know how this movie kind of had to end. We knew they had to be successful in getting the Death Star plans. And I think both you and I would agree for sure that question of emotional stakes, of creating characters uh-huh. that we cared about, they knocked that out of the park.
Oh, they sure did.
I think I remember you saying you were looking forward to seeing the droid played by Alan Tudyk. That character was amazing.
It reminded me in a lot of ways of the way they played the Hulk in the Avengers.
Yes,
you know, they pick his spots. I mean, they had some highlights for him. It's mostly glorified comic relief, but it's also a very big integral part of what's going on. You know what I'm saying? But he's mostly played for laughs.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Makes me think that what I really liked about Rogue One and how I think some of the emotional stakes for me were raised was because of just the very organic, natural flow of this uh-huh. film. The humor is a great thing. There was a lot of humor in Force Awakens, for example. Uh-huh. There were times where that felt a little shoehorned in and a little too campy. There was some humor in this too, but it was just a lot more organic in its execution. And I think that's a testament to the writing, to the acting. My favorite character in the film, honestly, might have been Diego Luna as Cassian. I loved his performance.
Well, you know, the K2 character seemed to have if not all, the vast majority of the best laughs in the movie were his. And in this movie, more so than any other Star Wars movie I can remember, had a real dry sense of humor.
Right.
Not nearly as corny or as obvious, or as, but it seemed much more wittier in a way. You know what I'm saying? Like the humor was not really as in your face as maybe you watch A New Hope, and whatever, what the few attempts there are at jokes are very, very like ham-fisted jokes. I mean,
so one more character we need to mention before moving on from this topic, and that of course is Jyn Erso. And we'll just mention this real briefly. Brian, where would you kind of put her in terms of other Star Wars heroes? Where does she kind of rank alongside Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia? Does she hold her own, do you think?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, we haven't really seen Leia in action do that much. I mean, really, we saw her, most of the time she's served as more or less a damsel in distress type. But I mean, even in the first movie, that's what she was. Now she did help with the escape a little bit, but we've never really seen her. I'd say she's above Leia, but I'd say overall she's probably in a second tier beneath Han and Luke, because I think it's gonna be tough in one movie to overcome the stuff that we know they have done and been capable of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I would say though, even given that, again, it's obvious that they created emotional ties. When you're sad that basically everyone dies at the end.
I'm not arguing with that. No. The girl would have been a really awesome and effective leader within the Rebel Alliance, right, had she, because she more or less 30 people to join a suicide mission.
Let's move on then to the second question. Second question is, how well did this do establishing a wider universe? And I think you and I might agree pretty well on this one. It didn't necessarily make the universe wider, but it certainly added a depth to it. More than expand the universe, it kind of was world-building at its absolute best. Can you say a few words what you think about that idea?
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I mean, and this is the very first Star Wars movie that featured absolutely no Jedis. Okay, there was no good guys with the Force that you could count on the Force to kind of like work in their favor. The only Force-sensitive character we had was Darth Vader. Everybody else was sort of, you know...
Well, and the two Guardians of the Wills, right?
I guess, but they weren't really force sensitive. I mean, they didn't have lightsabers. They didn't move anything with their mind. I mean, they believed in the Force, but they weren't really. And you know, and in one point, the other main characters sort of dismissed them as being fanatics of something that doesn't exist.
Right.
So I mean, the Rebel Alliance in this movie was not necessarily big time believers in the Jedi, or, you know, which is crazy in one sense, because we're only talking about roughly 20 years and everybody's like, I don't believe in them anymore. That was only 20 years ago, guys.
That was kind of a story arc in the film itself, a little bit underplayed, the role of the Force, perhaps, kind of a B-plot in some ways, because that still was
the guy standing and whatever, and it still had a faith, but I mean, I think the larger issue to that was about just what faith in anything will enable you to be able to overcome.
Right. So part of the world building there was adding to another perspective on the Force, on the Jedi, and that sort of thing. What else? What else do you feel really got built in the world? What did this film add that makes Star Wars, particularly episodes 4, 5, and 6.
I say that it is a rare feat. This is high praise that a movie could not totally, but reinterpret a 40-year-old film and make it better. Just give it a whole new dimension. That's hard to do, and they certainly did that. And they did this based on, you know, the imagination of what one line of dialogue and a passing scroll could do, and they turned it into something that really, in a lot of ways, to me, will change the way we see A New Hope.
Well, yeah, they took what was the biggest kind of logistical critique of A New Hope, which is, how are they able to destroy the Death Star that easily? And built around it in a way that was really believable.
And all of a sudden turned that weakness into a strength. And yeah. We were talking before we went on the air saying, for me, I have been very resistant to call the original movie, the number four, episode four, A New Hope. I just thought that was lame, and it was Star Wars, it was first Star Wars. But now I feel a lot more comfortable doing that because of this movie.
Yeah. So it excelled probably in deepening more than world widening. But I got to tell you, I still think I would answer the question of, was this film necessary? I think I'd still probably say no, not completely. But to me, the story was so well done. The depth it added was so satisfying. The characters were just really great. I think amongst some of the best that I've seen in the Star Wars universe. That I would say whether it was necessary or not, I'd almost say that question doesn't even matter now. It exists.
You know, one thing though that this movie,
who cares if they needed to do it or not?
Well, one thing that this movie, and thinking about it now, this is just occurring to me. One thing it's done to me is, it sort of makes me a little mad at Yoda and Obi-Wan.
Oh yeah,
because they're not. I mean, they are letting thousands of people just go off and fight their fight while they are hiding. And it seems a little selfish on their part, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you can argue they're biding their.
I mean,
time.
I guess at least Obi-Wan, it makes some sense in the fact that he is watching over Luke from a distance. All right. Mm-hmm. But Yoda has retreated to Hermitville and left, like I said, thousands of people just to go off on missions that he could have helped.
So that strikes you maybe not at this point with the movie itself, but...
I'm just disappointed in Yoda.
but maybe that launches into talking about some of some criticisms that this movie raises. What would you say or anything that the movie... didn't maybe do as well as you hoped it might?
Well, one thing, and this is not something I hoped it would, but, okay, at the end of this movie, the last 10 minutes are some of the most intense, just wonderful filmmaking. And it's the best, like, bridge of a gap that I've seen in a long time, the way it bridges the gap between the two movies so well. But the only problem that I might have is that Darth Vader becomes such a brutal, just completely evil character in that little stretch where he's just destroying people left and right. I don't know that he was ever that brutal in any of the other original trilogy. I almost think watching it, it's almost going to feel like he was toned down in Empire and Return. Like, where was that character? And it just may be hard to, like, it may be hard continuity-wise for me to think, that's not the same guy.
Yeah, we never saw that intense violence.
No.
We saw the calculating. We saw, you know, an Empire, he kills like three generals by choking them to death.
Yeah. But so he's never like just going into a room just slaughtering everybody in the room.
But yeah, there's so there may be, even though that's a really powerful moment, I see what
you're
saying.
Oh, it's a great scene. But my problem is it's almost like
questions.
It almost like betrayed the character from the originals because it took him to a level he never got to in those movies.
And that's also part of my probably one criticism, which is at that point too, like there should be like a vacuum from space taking Darth Vader out of the ship. And
well, I'm assuming that it's something that there's like a force field somewhere that
but still, that just kind of took me out of the movie for a minute.
And the other
this was one other disappointment I had. You mentioned earlier about the characters who are devotees to the Force. I really thought there was one character, and I can't remember the names, but the gunner guy.
One who had the thing on his back.
Yeah, and his blind friend said, you know, he used to be the one most devoted, but he's given it up. I thought really after his friend died, his compatriot, his boon companion, I thought for real, like, there was going to be a lightsaber at that point. That, like, not only was he a devotee, but now he's going to be Jedi. And he's still going to die, because they were all going to die. Once the Death Star was showing up, they were all going to die. But I really thought that was going to happen, and that it didn't was a slight disappointment for me. We're running out of time. We're running out of time a little bit. So we need to move on again from this. Seems our disappointment's fairly minor. So So I want you just, in the time we have left, name what your favorite moment in the film was. Your top.
Oh, the last 10 minutes were just phenomenal. From the moment the Death Star is turned onto the base, and just the perfect irony that the guy who helped create the Death Star is staring up at the Death Star coming down the... That was perfect. That was just a perfect way for that guy, that character, to meet his end. But then from there through to when they're getting the plans on, and just that madness and that rush and that trying to get that door open and all that as Darth Vader's coming down on them, that was some of the most intense moments in Star Wars that I've seen.
That last 10 minutes was incredibly compelling.
And even the Leia, kind of in some ways cheesy, but the Leia cameo was really beautifully done.
Yeah. I really liked too, in that last, I'll pick a particular moment from that last 10 minutes we haven't touched on yet, because it's another thing that some might criticize in some way as being forced in or shoehorned in. But really in like the last 20 minutes, there was like some sort of growing relationship also between Jen and Cassian. And even that felt really natural. And even to the point where it felt like finally there's these two people who have not, for whatever reason, been able to have a real connection. Jen, because her family basically died before her eyes, even though her father, much later than her mother. And Cassian, there's some backstory there, but he says how he's had to compromise a lot and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that connection even isn't necessarily romantic as much as it's just a human connection.
Yeah.
And that sort of to me exemplified, I think, what this film did really, really well. Better than a lot of the Star Wars movies have been able to do. I think Star Wars is a fantasy film, as much as it's a sci-fi film. Swords and knights and evil forces and quests and journeys. This film, though, made it more human and more real, and I really appreciated that. And that was captured in that. And those particular moments you're talking about, too, for me, it was very
human. This is the first Star Wars movie where a Skywalker was not a central character in the film. And that was good and refreshing. And I will say, to the other major thing I love was I love that the first the mother, then the father, then the daughter, all three stood up to the same bad guy and said, "You will lose." Like, I love that.
Amazing. Yeah, that was great. So, listeners, it's obvious we really enjoyed this film, loved this film. We hope you might, too, and might want to talk with us about it. There's a number of things we didn't mention. The issue of CGI use, Brian referenced the Leia, but also in the character of Grand Moff Tarkin. A couple other things we didn't just have time for to talk about. If you'd like to chat more about this movie, join us on Twitter at 10K Movies, T-E-N-K Movies. Let us know what you think. Check out Brian's blog. Let us know more about any of the movies that he has seen and that we've had a chance to talk about on the quest for 10,000. We really do appreciate you listening, following this podcast as we continue to watch movies with Brian trying to get to 10,000 before he turns 40. Until next time, we hope that the Force may be with you and that your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline
11.